The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
You're listening to the Sharks Audio Network. Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, we are getting ready for the NHL draft coming up on June 27th. Of course, the Sharks do have the number 2 overall pick, and I thought I'd bring in some of our esteemed members in the media to discuss what's going on with San Jose as we head towards the draft. We've got Curtis Pichelka, Bay Area News Group, Max Miller, NHL.com, and Sheng Peng, San Jose Hockey Now, as well as NBC Sports California. Gentlemen, I will start off with a 30,000-foot view of the Sharks heading into the draft. Curtis, let's start with you, just on where you think this team is and how that colors what they're going to be doing in this draft.
Well, I think they're still in a position. We asked this of Mike Greer, after the draft lottery about what the Sharks might be looking for, in the upcoming draft. And he said they're still in a spot where they're drafting just based on the best player available. It's not yet at a point where they're strictly looking at need. They've always got a deep prospect pool, much deeper than it was, two or three years ago, just considering where they've drafted, obviously, in the last couple of years. That helps, obviously. But, I think they're still in a spot where they want to just add the best player possible. And, who knows who that might be at number 2, if that's indeed where they'd select this year. But I think that's where the Sharks are coming from for at least this draft right now.
Max, 30,000-foot view as the team enters the draft. Same question.
Yeah, I mean, building off what Curtis said, right? Like, over the season, I think it was around the deadline, right after the trade deadline, Mike said they would be active in the offseason. So I personally expect maybe some moves. I mean, we've seen, night before trades, like last year, the Sharks traded from 14 to 11 and drafted Sam Dickinson. I think they'll keep that second pick, but I don't see them being quiet and just making their picks and moving on. I agree with Curtis. I think it's just going to be whoever is the best available that they view on their board at number 2 is who they'll select. I personally think it'll be Michael Misa, but we don't know. We're not in the room. But I think they're at the position where they can maybe make some moves, maybe acquire more NHL ready rather than maybe build some prospects, that maybe need some more seasoning. So they have the assets to move this draft and next draft to kind of play around and really kind of build their roster how they choose, as well as the cap space. But from the short term, I think that first round, best available at number 2, and go from there.
Sheng, same question to you.
I would expect them to use the number 2 pick too, but it is possibly their best trade chip to improve the team, and not improve the team in a way that doesn't make sense by acquiring some veteran who is like a 30-something, but maybe you can get a younger player that can grow with the team a little bit. And there are some guys out there, some interesting names out there that maybe the number 2 pick can be a piece for that.
You're at the combine, Sheng. What's the chatter?
Well, it does sound like maybe it could be Misa. That's sort of the cliche. I mean, you expect the Islanders to go with Schaefer, and then the Sharks to pick the best available player, which is Misa, probably Misa. The number 1 and number 2 pick too. They haven't moved in a long time. It's been like 20 plus years since that pick has moved, at least during the draft or around the draft. So that would be kind of a bit of a setting history again if the Sharks were to move the pick. So chances are they're just going to make that pick. I'm trying to kind of figure out if maybe something else happens. Maybe they might be interested in another player than Misa. I do know that they did take Misa out for dinner for what it's worth, and he had a sundae with the Sharks. So, but we'll see if that means anything on draft day.
Yeah, I mean, Max, when you look at these players, I know that people always talk about Martone fitting the mold of what Greer is looking for, but I always think that's kind of funny because who wouldn't want a 6'3", athlete that's a little bit mean and nasty out there on the ice. Like, I always feel that's a little bit of an oversimplification, but I mean, do you think there are legit arguments beyond Misa for some of the other guys? I know Hagans is obviously one of the guys who's there as well. I know the knock on him has been size, but you know, even, you know, I can name a, you know, go until I'm blue in the face about smaller players that end up being pretty decent. But I mean, does it feel like if they stay with that number two, that will be Misa? And is there anything that you've heard that, you know, the Islanders will move on and not take Schaefer number one overall?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's a very small argument to make that maybe if Misa or even Hagans to that extent, you know, isn't Mike Greer's style of player. But as we've seen kind of in the past, whether it's Will Smith and even most recently Macklin Celebrini, size when it comes to talent, Mike Greer is going to err on the sides of talent. And those later picks, whether it's the 11s or even like the later first rounders, like with Beast, that he's going to go for maybe the mold of a player that he's looking for. So I think, you know, there's an argument for Martone and there's an argument for Desnoyers. I totally butchered that name. Or even Roger McQueen, who had that injury filled season because of that style of play that we've seen Mike Greer want to add in. But I think when it comes to talent, I think Misa's talent is too undeniable for Mike Greer to maybe push that on. I like this style of player. I want to build around it because you do need that top talent regardless of anything else that you want on your team. You need to build around that top talent. As far as the Islanders moving it, I mean, Matthew Darst, the new GM of the Islanders, has doubled down. I mean, twice he said he expects to make the pick. He said he needs to get his socks knocked off to move that first overall pick. Shang mentioned it's been over almost 20 plus years since those first two picks have been traded. So I don't expect the Islanders to move it. I mean, we heard Mike tell us at the exit interviews he needed a Herschel Walker level deal to move the first overall pick for Macklin Celebrini. And he told us he also hung up within 30 seconds. So I don't see too much happening there other than picking the best available, which I do think is going to be Michael Misa.
When we look, Curtis, at what the Sharks are going to be looking at from this draft versus the idea of them making a potential move, and they do have options both in this draft and next draft, how does that go up against what we've heard time and time again from what Mike Greer has said about not wanting to rush things? Because I do feel like in his draft lottery press conference, he, and even at the deadline this year after the trades, he made a couple of comments that were more indicative of him not wanting to rush things, but maybe his mindset had changed by the time that he had gotten to that deadline this year about where this team was and where it could be.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Sharks are going to be active to some degree this summer. I mean, they got to spend something like $20 million just to get to the floor, I think, yeah, if I remember correctly. So, so they're going to be out there in terms of signing players. I think there's a feeling in the organization that, you know, it's the time to the tearing down time is over, and it's time to sort of rebuild this thing, and give some faith back to the fan base that this thing is going in the right direction. I don't know if that's impatience, but at the point it's like, okay, you've missed the playoffs for 6 years in a row. Mike Greer's been here for 3 years now. You know, when is sort of this team going to take the next step and go forward? And I think this offseason is going to be pretty huge for that. So, you know, who knows if it'll, you know, despite their best intentions, where they'll end up next season. But I think definitely the plan is just to take a step forward this year. And how that happens, I'm not sure. Like Shang mentioned, you know, to use the second overall pick to get better immediately. You have other draft capital and certainly other prospects to help with that as well, too. So, you know, I don't think it would just be a normal offseason for the Sharks. I would expect them to take steps and maybe not spend huge money on some of the names that are out there, like we all hear, but this definitely you'll become a harder team to play against and build a certain identity and take a step that way. Maybe not a baby step, but a step nonetheless.
Curtis, I'm not picking on you because we've all said it, take steps. That's nebulous though. I mean, what does that mean in your mind, or what do you think that means to Mike Greer?
Well, I mean, if we want to point to an example, I think what the Anaheim Ducks did this past season is probably a pretty good example of what maybe the Sharks are looking to do this upcoming year. I mean, let's face it. I think the Sharks finished something like 40, 45 points out of a playoff spot. So that's going to be very, very difficult to make up in 1 year. But can you get 20 points better this upcoming season and finish some, you know, 70, 70 or so, and maybe 28th or 29th the league in the overall standings. I think that's realistic, and I think that's enough progress to signal to the fan base that things are going in the right direction. And then maybe in 2026, 27, that's when you make a bigger splash and really sort of put your minds towards being a playoff team. But that's kind of how I would answer that. It's just how, what is improvement? What is a step forward? I would say that's, to me, that's what kind of maybe makes the most sense for this organization to, and realistically to what they might look to do next season.
Max, what about you? How do you view the timeline, and where do you think this team should be when we reconvene a year from now?
Yeah, I think Curtis, excuse me, Curtis put it, pretty accurately to what I would agree with, where it's the Anaheim Ducks are a very good example. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Where, they weren't quite, totally in the playoff push, but they were there, right? You saw them, you're like, okay, if they stayed hot here, there's a chance, and maybe they fizzled out at the end. But I think that's the biggest thing is in terms of being competitive, right? They are competitive. They were in more games this year, but you need to be more competitive, not just on the ice now, but more in the standings, I think is the best way to put it. And I'm with Curtis. I agree. I think you're a year away from really competing for a playoff spot, but you want to be in and around the noise and the conversation. If, I guess is how I would put it. The other step that I would focus on is making sure that players like Smith and Celebrini and Bisted and Graf and all these prospects that are looking to maybe take that next step, especially Celebrini and Smith, do take that next step. So that's surrounding them and with top players more than just one Tyler Toffoli and Ekman for that matter too. Can we get them to fulfill their most potential, and move them to that state? Because if they stay stagnant or don't develop, then all the work you've done on the building of the roster side kind of goes to waste, because you need those guys to be your top players. So I think competitive in the standings, not just on the ice, and continuing the better development of the quote unquote core players of Smith, Celebrini, Eklund, and Dickinson if he's in the NHL.
Shane, to the points that Max and Curtis made, do we look at a movement forward like Anaheim and seeing more from Macklin and Will? Is that enough for the fans to stay bought in? I know last year watching the two young stars, number four from 2 years ago, number one from this past season, emerge and look like they had star potential in the NHL was a lot for fans to glom onto. But at the end of the year, I mean, we saw the Sharks were once again the worst team in the NHL. I think the first team to do that 2 years in a row in the lottery era. They had been, just they weren't a good team. They were better last year, but they weren't good. I mean, we often said, oh, they're very entertaining. Fans want to see wins. So, I mean, can fans be satisfied with another growth year?
Well, I think the Anaheim Ducks are a bit of a lofty goal, because I think they had 30 more points than the Sharks. And so that's a lot of points to make up. I think that if the Sharks just get out of being the worst team in the league, that could be a satisfactory step. To Max's point, I think it's more about the individual players, though. Specifically, three key guys that I would focus on. Does Macklin Celebrini take another step? Not just for stardom, because he already is a star, but superstardom. Because that's what the Sharks need. They need them to be that franchise linchpin, Nathan MacKinnon, Sidney Crosby type, if they are going to take that step. And for Will Smith, the stardom, can he be a reliable kind of point per game player, which is what they eventually need him to be. And another guy too, just as important as those guys, is the goaltender, Yaroslav Askarov. And is he the true number one answer for the Sharks? And so if those three things happen for the Sharks, it really doesn't matter what happens elsewhere in a lot of ways, because that means your core pieces are just fine. Not to say that it doesn't matter at all, but those are the three main guys I'm looking at among the youngsters that they really need to take that step. And then Willie Mecklen in there too. If those guys can take that step, then whether the improvement is 60 points or 70 points or 80 like Anaheim, that doesn't matter so much, the exact number of points. It's just more about the the linchpin guys, if they take huge steps toward assuring the fan base that they are the answer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree to that point, because I do think that you need to see those guys moving forward. And I've made the lazy comparison very many times to where the Warriors were before they really got rolling, but people could look at Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Harrison Barnes and think, okay, there's something building here that's positive. I don't think anybody saw it going to the heights that it did, but I mean, I think fans can be bought in. Shane, before I move on, I know you had a report that was out about the Sharks talking to William Eklund about a contract extension.
Yeah. So I saw Mike Greer and his agent, Todd Diamond. They were chatting and I learned that indeed they were talking about William Eklund extension. I think it is a good sign that both sides, they seem to want something to get done before the start of this season, because mm-hmm. they could have just let it play out this season. And if they had just let it play out this season, and that might be indicative of the Sharks, maybe they're not sure about Eklund, or maybe Eklund's not so sure about the Sharks. But if they want something done before his actual contract expires at the end of the 2025-26 season, they want something done when the extension is first eligible on July 1st, then that's a sign of kind of their commitment to each other. And anyway, it's hard to say exactly what that commitment will be. I think it's still early stages of that conversation, but it sounds like they both want to be married together for a little while, which is a good thing.
Max, what's your greatest concern about the team heading into next year? I mean, obviously we don't know what free agency and the draft will yield, but I guess if you were looking big picture, I mean, what concerns you about where they are right now?
I think it kind of goes along the lines of what the last, couple questions have been about, where it's about player development, right? Like, can you continue this trend? Because that right now, without that, everything that the Sharks are quote unquote building towards, it didn't work. You didn't build the right core. You didn't develop the right core. Mm-hmm. And, I'm not saying that if all things go poorly and everything goes wrong next season, they're going to fall into a Buffalo Sabres perpetual rebuild situation. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen, even if everything does go wrong next year. But that, to me, is the biggest worrisome. Can you continue to build a culture of being more competitive in games and start to win those games, right? One thing that Ryan Warsawski said all season is that, yeah, they're building, a culture of winning, but they're not winning yet. Like, they need to start winning those games. You need to understand that losing is not okay. And building on that with whatever moves they make through the draft, free agency, trades, whatever it might be, need to be able to push that narrative forward where it's not okay to lose and you don't have that much losing mm-hmm. while still keeping those player developments. That's the biggest thing for me, even if everything goes poorly, is you need to win a few more games with the development continuing to trend in the right direction.
And Curtis, and by the way, if any of you want to jump in, you don't have to wait for me to call on you. I'm not the teacher here, but Curtis, I'm curious, is there any concern that if the Sharks don't have the offseason that they're hoping to, that there could be frustrations for a Will Smith or a Macklin Celebrini after their second years of their entry-level contracts?
Potentially. I mean, I think we saw maybe some rumblings out of Chicago this year that maybe Connor Bedard was unhappy with the direction of the team and he wasn't necessarily interested in signing an extension this offseason. Maybe there's various reasons for that, but potentially. But, I think if things aren't going to be stagnant this year and they're another 50-55 point team, certainly I can see that happening and people wondering about the direction of the franchise and whether or not it'll ever turn a corner. But I don't necessarily see that happening. Certainly potential is there for that frustration to pop up. I mean, we all know Macklin Celebrini is the most competitive guy maybe on the team, and Will Smith isn't far behind. So mm-hmm. they want to see progress. They don't want to be in last place forever. They understand there's growth that needs to be had. But at the same time, having some more success and showing that this thing is going in the right direction, I think would keep that sort of frustration at bay, but we'll see how this season plays out. And trust me, if they get off to another horrible start like they have these last couple of years, those questions are going to be asked once again about, where is this team and is enough? How much progress is actually being made? So the proof is in the pudding. We'll see what happens, but I would tend to think those two Would love to see some progress, and obviously, see this team, continue to take steps forward, and from their perspective, show that they're part of a franchise that's going to be competitive sooner rather than later.
Max and Shang, I'll throw this question at both of you and whoever wants to jump on it first. But I was watching the game last night and I'm thinking to myself, okay, one team has two of the four greatest players on earth on their squad, one being the best, I would say maybe ever. It's like, that's a pretty good way to design a team if you have it. The other team, Florida, I was like, this is a mold that we have seen before. They're hard, they're heavy, but they're also fast. They're nasty. They've got a great netminder. But when I look at the Sharks, I'm still at a point where I can't 100% identify what they are as a team. I think it's too early in the process. I think they would lean more towards what Florida has built because I think we've seen versions of that over the years. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know what Macklin Celebrini's ceiling is. He was not touted to be Connor McDavid, only Connor McDavid. The only other prospect in my lifetime that I've seen compared to those heights is LeBron James in all sports. And the only one that's even in that stratosphere is probably Andrew Luck. So, I mean, I have to go to different sports to find comparisons. But what are the Sharks specifically building, or is it just too early to know?
Dang, you want to take it?
Sure. I think they want to build a big, fast. Probably the Panthers are a more likely kind of comp because, like you mentioned, getting a McDavid is once a generation kind of player. And Macklin, as special as he is, may end up, and this is not an issue. This is not a problem. He may end up closer to Barkov than McDavid. That's not a problem at all. You can win a lot with a Barkov. And so it's probably safer too to kind of build a team that is more geared toward depth than toward two select players because you're more likely to build a team that way, like Florida has, than to build it like Edmonton has, where you get McDavid and then Draisaitl comes along, and Draisaitl wasn't a number one pick, but Draisaitl ends up being nearly as good, and that there's a little bit of sort of you can't count on that as much as just sort of building the best possible team and then seeing what these guys become and then hoping that Smith, Celebrini, let's say it's a Misa, they become a player in the same breath as a Draisaitl.
Yeah, and Max, what's your thoughts on that in terms of what they are building towards?
Yeah, I think it's definitely more the Panthers way. And the first thing that popped into my mind is like, which one should they do? I know it could change as soon as like 2 or 3 weeks, whatever, but one team of theirs is a Stanley Cup champion and one team isn't when we're making this, right? Like, I think Florida has become the standard in terms of what NHL teams want to build with their roster for the most part. I'm not saying the Sharks need to be as nasty as, like, you have the Chuck Bennett and a Marchand on the team, right? That's a lot. A lot of teams would kill to have those players on the team, even just one. They've got three. But when it comes to what the Sharks have built, with like Shang said, like you can look at, you can almost turn it into a video game style potential, right? Connor McDavid is franchise altering, generational, whatever, and Macklin Celebrini's a franchise centerman, right? He's franchise center, but he's not, once in a generation altering level prospect. And with that in mind, right, he very well could be. We don't know, but he doesn't project to be. But with that in mind, the work ethic that he has on both sides of the ice projects to be more of a Barkov style player with maybe a little bit more offense. So when you have that player with who wants to work on both sides of the ice that much, building a better quality team around him with better players could not only help you, I guess, short term in terms of development of that young player, but also when you are competing for cups, I think your window will be longer because you don't have to have so much roster turnover because you have better depth pieces. And yeah, the teams like the McDavids and the Oilers, they have better depth now, but they've had to change their roster a ton. To get to that point, and there's a lot of question marks that are asked at the end of every season, which can be good and bad depending on the situation. But I think with where the Sharks are at, building the better roster around players like Macklin Celebrini will bring success not only more for him, but for the other young players like the Smith and Eklunds and whoever they pick it to.
Curtis, is there any danger in emulation in the sense that you build towards one thing, but when you're 3 to 4 years into it, you find out that you have something else? Because I could point to a number of teams in a number of sports that had an idea, but it ended up working out very differently. Not always negatively either. It's just, you know, there is an idea, but sometimes it just, it doesn't end up being what you're building towards.
I mean, for sure. And the league is always evolving. So what was hot maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago may not be hot by the time you sort of get there, kind of thing. So, so I mean, there's always a little bit of that danger, but I think as long as you stay true to your kind of your core values, and I think my career and this front office and the coaching staff kind of have a pretty good idea of what this team want it to look like. Kind of if you stay true to that, you know, win, lose or draw. I mean, you can at least go out saying, you know, he did it. If it doesn't work out, you can, you know, say, well, at least I'd stay true to myself and I stay true to my values and built the team how I felt it needed to be built. And you kind of ride with that. So It's not something that kind of, you know, fluctuates from year to year. You kind of have to stick with it over the course of time and hope it works out in your favor, kind of thing. So we'll see. I mean, I think the Sharks still, they want to build that team from the first day of my career's, you know, in the first press conference where you say he wants to be a team that's hard to play against, in your face, that kind of thing. I think that's sort of what they continue to sort of strive towards. That's why you saw Fabian Zetterlund go out the door for Zach Ostachuk this year, because, you know, he wants those type of players around this year. And, you know, as they kind of continue to move forward here, I would expect them to sort of, you know, continue to their, you know, stay true to their vision and kind of let the chips fall where they may, I guess.
I guess as a final one for you, Curtis, because we're running out of time here, when that number two pick is called, who do you expect the Sharks are selecting, assuming they don't trade it?
I'd be stunned if it wasn't Michael Misa. He's a guy who could play forward with the wing. You add him alongside, you project him as maybe a top two, maybe a second line center that allows you to keep Will Smith up at the top line with Mac and Celebrini long term. I don't know if Michael Meese is ready to be in the NHL right away. The time will tell, but I would expect that to happen. But you never know. You know, if the Sharks got some assets to dangle, I know, like Max was saying about the Islanders GM, you need to knock his socks off, but I don't know if one thing about Mike Kerr we learned over the past couple of years, if he wants something, he's going to go out and get it. We saw that with the Askarov trade. You know, we saw that last year, moving up in the draft a little bit to get the guy he wanted. It's a long shot that they move up to number one. But if they do stay at number two, I would fully expect them to draft Michael Meeson.
Same question to you, Max. Where do you think the Sharks are drafting at number two, assuming that they still have the pick?
Yeah, I'm, you know, if they have the pick, which I'm guessing they do, I don't see any way you could deny picking Michael Misa. That offensive talent is undeniable. And, you know, Macklin Celebrini is a great two-way player, and we want him to be offensive as much as possible. But adding somebody with that much offensive potential maybe takes a little bit of the offensive load off his back in the long run. Something that Curtis mentioned that I'm pretty, you know, certain on is if the Sharks take Michael Misa, I don't believe Will Smith and Michael Misa will both be centers for them. I think one of them will play the wing. Mm-hmm. We saw the success that Curtis mentioned between Celebrini and Smith with Smith on the wing. I think if Michael Misa is the pick, someone's got to play wing to keep them in the top six. And I think it would be Smith, just because of his skating ability. He's a good skater, not a great skater. We know Misa's got a good skater. He's not the biggest, so he's got to be a great skater. And you're not moving Macklin off the center position unless you bring in a Sidney Crosby for him to say, okay, I'll play the wing like he did with Canada. But I think it'll be Misa, and I do think it's interesting if that is the pick, who plays wing to stay in the top six.
Shang, assuming the Sharks have that number two pick, who are they taking?
I think it's Misa too, and I think you just had to tell Will Smith that's the only chance that he gets to play with Macklin Celebrini. He's got to be on his wing. And once you tell Will that and Macklin that, you know, those guys are inseparable. And so I think that will convince Will.
It's interesting because so much of the talk had been moving Will to center eventually, but, and I can't remember who I heard say it recently. It may have been Corey Prama of The Athletic. He said, usually when guys go out, they don't often come back in, but I mean, even if you do have two guys in Misa and Smith maybe battling for that second line center position, I, it's a good problem to have. You know, I don't have any qualms with that. But gentlemen, we are running out of time. So I thank you so much for your time and your work as always. And we will talk soon. All right.
Thanks, Ted.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.
Fighting for it, trying to poke it up the right wing side. Couldn't clear it out. Ryan Suter's shot is blocked by Toffoli, and he almost raced away on a breakaway, but it was blocked, and the Sharks are going to have to regroup. They do. Here's Celebrini on the right wing side. Spinorama play to the net. Tip score! I think that went off the defense, and that should be Macklin Celebrini's goal with William Eklund right in front of the net. It's past goaltender Joel Hofer, and the Sharks are up 1-0 at 7:01 of this first period. And you can't write a script much better than that with Celebrini in on the very first goal of the season.